Herzlich willkommen beim Prep to Perform Podcast mit Fee Bayer. Hier werfen wir einen Blick hinter die Kulissen, wo Menschen sich auf körperliche Höchstleistungen wie sportliche Wettkämpfe, Spiele, künstlerische Bühnendarstellungen oder andere Ereignisse vorbereiten. Wir beleuchten dabei vor allem die Athleten- bzw. Künstlerbetreuung in all ihren die Leistung beeinflussenden Facetten, von der Trainingsplanung über kulturelle Aspekte und eingesetzte Technologien bis hin zu aktuellen Trends. Mit diesem Podcast wollen wir unseren Beitrag zum Teilen von Wissen in diesen Bereichen leisten und interdisziplinäres Lernen fördern. Viel Spaß bei dieser Folge. Hi and welcome to episode number 105 of our Prep to Perform podcast with Fee Bayer. Today, please join me in welcoming Dr. Matteo Bartalucci, Head of Medical Services at Formula Medicine. Matteo is currently in the office in Tuscany. Matteo, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Fee. Hello, everyone.
I'm thrilled to have you. We know each other from a project on mental training. I think that's back from a few years. And back then, I was so impressed by the work you do mainly in motorsport. We'll get to this later on. That I wanted to share this on my podcast. And now that we are also doing English episodes, you were actually one of the first people I addressed and reached out to asking for that podcast.
I was waiting for an Italian episode, but we can do it.
Okay, next level. So you guys have created the so-called mental economy training method, which we're going to talk about today. And that's probably everything we're going to discuss will be more or less circled around that topic. Before we start, please give us like a general introduction of what Formula Medicine is, what you do and what your customer or who your customers are.
Yeah, so it's correct. My name is Matteo Bartalucci. I'm a doctor. I'm an emergency medicine physician. And I am the head of medical services here in Formula Medicine since 2017. My duty here is peculiar. I am taking care of a lot of professionals, mostly doctors, which are traveling all around the world to provide medical assistance to our clients in many different motorsport championships. So it's Formula One, WEC, IMSA in the United States. And more or less, we employ each year 80 professionals, from doctors, physiotherapists, strengthening and conditioning coach, so a lot of people. And I'm also leading the R&D department here in Formula Medicine, which is becoming every year more and more an important part of Formula Medicine, and as you will discover later on. Formula Medicine is a sports medicine clinic, which was found back in 1989 by Dr. Riccardo Ceccarelli, who is a sports medicine doctor, who is still leading the company, and he's actually the CEO of the company. And we are based in Italy, so our main headquarters is in Tuscany. And we consider ourselves the world leader in the motorsport world, as you say. In fact, our numbers are quite impressive if you consider that we have been training more than 1,600 drivers during the last 30 years, coming basically all over the world, more than 69 different nationalities. We currently see 250-300 professional athletes per year. I would say 90% professional drivers, but then, as you will see later, now we started to work with professional tennis players, with astronauts, and with other, and also in the corporate world. So we started as a motorsport company, but now we are becoming more 360 degrees company, especially when talking about the mental economy training. We are in Formula One since 1989. If you consider that a few years ago, the Formula One celebrated the 1,000th race ever, and we have been present in more than 50% of the Formula One history, so more than 600 Grand Prix. And during the years, of course, we have been providing assistance to many Formula One teams, to many Formula One drivers. And in 2024, now the season is about to start, so we are now in the middle of the preparation of the upcoming season. And we are partnering with 7 Formula One teams, where we provide a medical assistance at racetrack, at each race of the F1 calendar. And we provide assistance to some MotoGP teams as well. And we have been partnering with BMW Motorsport in Munich since to more than 12 years. So at each race, the BMW drivers are competing. We provide them with a medical and physio assistance all around the world. We are quite busy, let's say.
Yes, very impressive numbers. Not only the sheer amount of drivers, but also like the time you're already in this business, and also the number of Formula One teams that you're working with. So obviously it all started with providing medical assistance to the Formula One teams. Speaking of the collaboration with the teams, like maybe you can describe like a typical staff around the drivers. Obviously in this podcast we talk a lot about football, also some other Olympic sports. I'm sure the staff around the driver looks different in Formula One than it looks in like Bundesliga, for example.
No idea. I mean, I've not experienced in other sectors, but differently compared to our competitors, we believe a lot in the team work. And this is why, for example, even here in our clinic, every day there are a lot of different professionals which are working in a very synergic way every day. So we are doctors, physio, psychologists, athletic trainers, nutritionists, and every day we do a morning meeting to understand what it needs to be done with our athletes and what has been done with our athletes. While some other like to put a strengthening and conditioning coach to live together with the drivers 365 days per year. And this man becomes the main point of contact for the drivers, even when talking about medical things, nutrition things. So we believe that it's better to have different professionals who can see the problem from different point of views. And this would absolutely be an extra benefit for the professional athletes. And this is the spirit that has been transmitted by Riccardo, and this is what we are doing right now. So honestly, the staff around the drivers is a real staff composed by different professionals. So anyone who is coming here to train will undergo a medical checkup with ultrasound scan and some other medical test, of course blood test. Then he will go with a strengthening conditioning coach to do some tests and the athletic preparation, and then with the psychologist to do the mental assessment and the mental preparation. But then every now and then all these different professionals meet together in the meeting room to talk about the situation, and we do the work all together. This is the peculiarity, I guess, of our center, because we have been going around the world to see different sporting environment, and we saw that there are different professionals, but they are not really able to work all together. So there is the psychologist team, which is, I would say, something which is on its own. And then there is the medical team. Here we try to be all integrated with the same goal.
Mm-hmm. Maybe to differentiate, so I think you're currently describing like the staff you have in-house, but I'd also be interested to kind of compare this to the staff that usually a team brings to the table, and how are you actually adding to that? So is there like, does it really look very, very different from team to team? Or is there like some sort of standard staff that you would usually find when you start working with one of the Formula One teams?
Well, I mean, considering that we provide the assistance to 7 Formula One teams, we created the standard. So we provide the doctors, which again is not only taking care of the drivers. Mm-hmm. When talking about Formula One, we are talking about 100 people each team traveling more than 30 weeks per year. And so we are there to provide assistance from the first mechanic till the managers, till the drivers, of course. And on some of the Formula One team we assist, we also provide a physiotherapy service, which is, again, taking care not only of drivers, but also all the other teams. So I would say that the basic service is composed by a doctor and a physio. And then, of course, there is the remote support of our psychologist and trainer. But we try to recreate our, let's say, winning schema that we have here in Formula Medicine, even when providing the service at racetrack or wherever we need to deliver our service.
Okay. And like for last question to the staff at the team. So do they have some sort of, I don't know, someone who actually helps the driver not only prepare physical and mentally, but also like on a strategic, from a strategic point of view, like you would have, again, in football, the match analysts who help them like prepare or analyze a match afterwards. Do you have something like that in the staff as well?
Not really. I mean, Formula One is really a technical game, let's say. It's a technical sport. So, for example, when talking about analyzing the performance, of course, it's the race engineer which analyzes together with the drivers straight after a driving stint the performance of the driver from a technical point of view. And of course, at races, the drivers are completely surrounded by a team of people, which is provided by the team itself. So, for example, I'm taking care of, in particular, of AlphaTauri, which is now called Racing Bulls Formula One team. And I mean, our drivers are always surrounded by the media team, so they are responsible for all the media content and the relation with international media and newspaper. And then, of course, the engineers were talking about technical things. And then, of course, we are there to help in case the drivers need some extra support. When talking about the race weekend, the drivers must be protected, because the only things he needs to have in mind is to drive quickly. So everything that we can do in order to let him thinking only to his driving activity is really beneficial. And this is what they are really looking for. So they use the off-track season to make the preparation. But then once the season starts, they have a lot of other stuff to do.
Yeah, I can imagine. So cool. So you're focusing basically on different elements, like obviously starting with the medical part and physio part, but also nutrition, S&C, and others. So is there anything else you're providing to the teams, or is this like the big picture that you shared with us already?
We provide a mental training also for the team itself, not only for drivers. For example, with my team, in particular Racing Bulls, since many years, we started a training protocol to improve their performance on the pit stop at races. As you know, pit stop are becoming a really an important part of the Formula One race, because it can do a lot of difference in a race. And so we are actually providing Then with an athletic preparation off season, one of our strengthening and conditioning coach during the winter season went to the team headquarters in Faenza to provide 4 weeks of athletic trainings with a lot of tests that, of course, we will repeat during the season. And with our psychologist, we went there to run some mental economy training session. And we believe that this at least has contributed a bit to improve the performance that that the team had in the last couple of seasons. You know that there is a classification, a ranking of the pit stop crew in the Formula One Championship. And when we started to work with them, they were ninth in this classification. And then after a couple of years, we contributed to the fact that they classified third in the championship of this particular ranking. So of course, nice. pit stop the support that we provide during pit stop is another part of our work in Formula One, and we are doing that. Nice. I'm told it's not only with one team, we are doing that in at least three teams. And it's something quite interesting because the pit stop analysis is something really fascinating, because it's like to have 16 people that must be coordinated between themselves. They must be ready, very reactive, very precise. So it's quite interesting.
Yeah, that sounds definitely very interesting. So you said like more or less 16 people that have some sort of active role during a very short time window, which is the pit stop. Can you maybe just pick one example? I don't know whether this be the S&C coach or the mental trainer or whoever, and run us through his or her task during the pit stop and how you can help him or her improve his or her performance during the pit stop.
Yeah, during the pit stop, I mean, you have what we call the gunners, so the men responsible to use the gun to unscrew and the wheel, which is, I would say, probably the most difficult role inside the pit stop. And then you have the wheel off and the wheel on, but at the same time, I mean, all the four wheels must be coordinated, and so it's really difficult. And what we did, for example, last year with one of the gunners of our team, who sometimes experienced a sort of anxiety due to the fact that he felt that his performance was going to influence the overall performance of the team, and so he started to feel the pressure about it. And so we provide a remote support with our psychologist. And then at races, we always bring some portable instruments, which are part of our training methodologies. And we run a training protocol, which is very personalized. So if I have to reduce the activation or the anxiety level of one of our gunners, I have to do a particular training protocol, while some other needs to be activated before doing the pit stop, because so it's really personalized. But I would say that we, especially with my team, we do a lot of mental training session off season, and then with portable instruments, we follow them up during the season. So we know exactly the personality and the characteristics of each one of them. And so we are able to follow them up regularly during the season, because I am sharing the season with another doctors, which is part of Formula Medicine as well. So when I'm not there, he is there. And again, it's always a question of sharing the impression that we had during the pit stop, so that our psychologists can help team components to improve their performance.
Okay, and those portable instruments, that would be some sort of mental training instruments or technologies?
Yes, I will explain you later.
Okay, so before we kind of near the mental training economy part, Maybe you can share some of the major learnings from working in motorsports and also from the research you've done. So what is the most exciting learning and data you can share with us, generally speaking, in motorsports?
There are a lot. Motorsport is a very high-pressure environment where you can imagine the attention to details is really brought to maximal levels. If you think that the performance is calculated most of the time on thousands of seconds. And so this environment was, and it is still today, the perfect environment where we can study and understand how the pressure can really affect the performance. So we really... I really learned a lot by living in this particular high pressure environment. And as a company, Formula Medicine, I would say that has been one of the first companies to try to bring a sort of medical culture inside the motorsport, which at the very beginning in the 1980s, all the attention was only on the car. If you see even some movies or some picture in those years, the drivers were smoking, the drivers was drinking beer, so all the attention was related to the car and not on the drivers. While when Ricardo started, he started from a failure. He wanted to become a Formula One driver and he failed. But then he became friend of a man who eventually became a Formula One driver. And when he arrived to Formula One, he asked Ricardo to join and to help him to train and to perform better. But Ricardo didn't know what to do because no one had studied the performance on a Formula One drivers. And so he started to collect data. He started to take blood sample before and after the race. He started to put some heart rate monitor during the race to understand to understand which was the main focus that he had to have in order to improve the performance of a Formula One drivers. And so he understood, for example, if you think that a Formula One drivers is able to stay for the entire race more or less on 160-170 beats per minute as average, of course, it was clear that one of the main parts of the training was to train the aerobic endurance. But then over the years, he understood that the difference between drivers is not the physical training. So it's more important the brain compared to the physical performance. And then he started to make research and study it related to the functioning of the brain of the drivers. And so the beginning of 2000, Ricardo, together with some big university here in Italy, set up a big research project. So he was able to bring 12 professional drivers inside a functional MRI scan to understand what was going on inside their brain, and put this group in comparison with another group of 12 normal people. So they were medical students, the same age. And inside this functional MRI scan, they could interact with some software. And so they were doing some mental tests, which were projected outside of the functional MRI scan. And in that situation, we understood what is the main difference when talking about brain performance between the top drivers and normal people. If I tell you, if I'm doing a reaction time test with a Formula One drivers against the Formula One drivers, and you would have to bet, would you bet on me or would you bet on Max Verstappen? And if the answer is I would bet on Max Verstappen, I can tell you that you would have the 50% of chance to fail. Because, for example, if I'm doing a reaction time test with a Formula One driver, the difference is not the time of answer. So Max and I will probably have the same reaction time when competing. The big difference is the brain energy that a normal people has to put in order
to get the same result of a Formula One driver. And if you see the picture of our publication, of our research, it's quite clear that there are two areas of the brain which are really different in functioning between drivers and normal group, which is the prefrontal cortex, which is the part of the brain which make us thinking and most of the time overthinking, and the second one, which is the motor cortex, so the part of the brain which control our muscles. Well, the difference is that the brain of the drivers, in order to perform and not cognitive action, so something which is really easy, like the reaction time test, the drivers are able to do that in a very automatic way, without, I would say, using the frontal part of the brain. While the normal people, to do the same task, they have to think a lot. And the more you think, the more you slow the process. And so you waste a lot of unnecessary energy. So this basically was the origin of the mental economy training, because the characteristics that Ricardo and this group found during this research, they called this characteristic mental economy. So the ability of the professional driver to save brain energy when doing some mental task. And so from there, Ricardo started the mental economy training. So a training protocol in order to help people in general to produce and to obtain top brain performance, but reducing an unnecessary waste of energy. And this is the origin of the mental economy training back in the beginning of 2000.
Wow. So that sounds like super interesting. So I guess this is something a driver, I don't know, is born with, or is their brain just very well trained because they did a lot of repetitions in doing just one certain task. So how come that the driver is going into like autopilot with certain mental tasks, and why do other people don't do that?
I would say it's a combination of factors. So of course, genetics is really important. So we train a lot of very young, talented drivers here, and it's quite clear that someone has a mental predisposition to become a world champion, because he has all the characteristic and the attitude to obtain top performance without wasting energy. While some other, in order to obtain more or less the same brain performance, they are wasting a lot of energy. And so, of course, the genetic predisposition is something really important. But all these aspects are really trainable. And this is what we are trying to do. Basically, I was saying that rather than the genetic predisposition, what we teach to our drivers with our instruments and methodology is to know better themselves. And if you know better yourself, then you can manage better yourself. And if you start knowing yourself when you are 14 or 15, and not when you are 35 or 36, of course, this is something which is really important when talking about not only sports, but life in general. And with our mental economy training, which has a very pragmatic approach to the brain performance, which is really quantify the brain efficiency, we see that it helps a lot of people to understand how their brain is performing on different mental tests. They understand a lot about themselves, about how they react to different situations, how they react to mistakes. And so when we see that starting from a 10 years old karting drivers, they start to develop a self-awareness, so the ability to develop a perception of their sensation during a performance, we see that these drivers has all the the ability to grow even in their career. So with our test, we are able to do, I would not say a sort of scouting, because again, we are not judging the technical ability, but we can definitely see if the person in front of us has the mental predisposition to become a top and professional athlete.
Yeah, I believe there is some sort of scouting program out there. We had in one of our previous episodes, we had Katarina from ADAC on the show. So it's a big motorsports club, let's put it in these words. But they have some sort of youth program where they identify potential strong drivers and then support them with certain services. And I remember that they sort of are creating or already created like a pattern which they kind of find to understand or to early detect someone with a big potential, and then they are going to support that driver in their further career. So yeah, but it seems like this is still a relatively young discipline, that scouting aspect and Formula One. But anyhow, so I think it's pretty interesting to talk about this self-awareness, because even with young drivers, they're very young, they're changing, they're also kind of building their personality in some sort of way. So maybe to summarize what you're saying, so you basically go through a past race with them and then show them, okay, in this situation, this is how you reacted, but you could have reacted also in a different way, or what does this sort of training look like in detail?
Yeah, so as I told you, the research that we started from highlighted the importance of two parts of the brain. The first one is the frontal part of the brain, and the other one is the motor cortex. Because unfortunately we cannot train drivers here in Formula Medicine using a functional MRI scan, which gives us an indication of how their brain is working in different mental tests, we use some other instruments. And for example, to measure the activation of the frontal part of the brain in different mental tests that we run inside our web platform, we use an electroencephalogram. Okay, so it's a wearable device that you put on top of your brain and detects the signal, the brain waves from the prefrontal cortex. So we extract the raw data from the EEG signal, we apply our own algorithm, and we also measure the heart rate, which for us is an indication of the muscular tension of the driver. So basically, inside our mental economy gym, because here in our headquarters we have mental economy gym, so it's a gym entirely dedicated to mental training, which is composed by different stations. So you in this station you can train up to four people together, because we want also to see and train you to compete against others, to understand how you react to high pressure situation. We monitor you with the EEG device and with a heart rate recorder. We put you in front of a web platform, and we put you in front of different mental tests, which of course investigate different mental skills. So we have created tests to investigate the concentration ability, the focus attention ability, the reactivity, the flexibility, and so on. After each test, we put you in front, as the race engineer does with the drivers as soon as they jump out of the car after a driving session. We put you in front of your telemetry. So basically, we combine the performance that you had during the test with your body consumption. And when I'm talking about body consumption, I'm talking about the energy that you spent from a mental point of view, and the workload that you had from a cardiovascular point of view. And so basically you see different lines after the test, So the first couple of lines are related to the performance that you had, and the second couple of lines are related to the body energy that you put in order to get this result. And so from there, it starts a sort of, debate between the drivers or the athletes or whoever is sitting in front of this station, together with the sport psychologist, who is the one responsible to deliver this kind of training. And so the sport psychologist will tell you, okay, in that particular moment you did a mistake during the test, and here below you can see how you reacted to the mistake. You can see the brain strain line, which is the line which is investigated the activation of the frontal part, which is going up, maybe because you start thinking a lot about the mistake you have just done. And as well, the heart rate is increasing because you started to get tense the moment you did the mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And so all these lead the athletes, after, of course, a period of training, to be able to understand how his body and his mind reacts after in different scenarios, okay? And so this is the real value of our mental economy gym and mental economy training. So the person who does the test really developed the self-awareness and the ability to understand his mindset and his cardiovascular tone in different scenarios.
We're talking about a lot of situations where the driver needs to act under a lot of pressure. I know this, I think everyone knows this from her or himself, that may that be in work, but also in private life, there's always situations that are very, very stressful for someone. And something happens that is not foreseeable, and then you kind of easily get caught in like a very stressful situation where you maybe even need to react very, very fast, right? So I find it very difficult to kind of just talking about my observations to change my behavior under stress or in stressful situations. Is that at all trainable, and how can you actually really change that internal process, that process that starts once the stress event activates that process?
This is the moment where the sport psychologist is really important, because, for example, I'm not the right person to answer this. But I mean, there are a lot of tricky games that is, or techniques, let's say, that a sport psychologist can teach you to be applied in the moment you feel that something is going on. Because, I mean, there are a lot of psychologist techniques out there, respiration, mindfulness, yoga, which are all fantastic techniques, but then you need to be able to apply those techniques as you told in different scenarios. So we are all good to be relaxed in a very in a room where we are alone, no lights, and so it's really easy to enter in that state. The one of our other value that we have inside the mental gym is that you can experiment different techniques. So the moment you feel that you are getting anxious because you did a mistake, or because you are competing against your teammates and he's doing better than you, and so you start to get tense, then together with the psychologist, you have to find your way to reduce this level. For example, we have many different tests where we can set some sort of threshold. And if you go over this threshold, the button that you use to do this test are not working anymore. So we can set, let's say, some EEG threshold. So if you go over this threshold, it means that you are overthinking, the button are not working, and so on the screen you have a feedback that you reach the threshold. Yes. And then you have to be able to go back to the previous status, so reduce the activation of the brain. And of course, at the very beginning, people don't know how to do, how to re-enter into a good performance state. But this is something that, again, talking about the psychologist, you can find a solution. And then you can go back into the mental gym and you can experiment if the techniques that you have applied is working or not. Because the techniques which is working for me, maybe is not working for you, Fee. And so...
Yeah. Yeah,
this is something that the work inside the mental gym is really flexible and variable. So we do tests, we understand the person in front of us. Okay, the sport psychologist teach some techniques. Then we go back again in the mental gym to experiment and to verify if these techniques are working or not. And so it's a back and forth.
Yeah, but what I think is really amazing about your work is that you discovered something that is actually applicable for everyone, not only for Formula One drivers, not only for other athletes, but really like for each one of us. Because I think acting under pressure, under high pressure, without getting stressed, is I think something everyone has to deal with, and reacting to those stressful events in a calm, relaxed way is definitely the challenge. And I totally get what you mean when you say mental economy training, because I think that's like, I think every one of us is experiencing those events where something is happening and you develop a lot of stress because you you start overthinking. And once you start overthinking, your body reacts to that, like getting muscular tension and stuff. And then that's the point where you're actually using up a lot of energy.
And this is why we teach a lot to our, I keep saying drivers, but in reality, we are training managers, doctors, so it's not only drivers.
Yeah.
We are teaching them to alternate automatic state to some other state where, of course, you have to have cognitive activation. Because, of course, if you are a surgeon or if you are a driver or a tennis player, there are moments where you have to be cognitive active, but there are some other moments where you have to be automatic, okay? So let's say the first day you took the driving license, if you remember, probably you were really tense, because the driving activity itself was not automatic. Now, after years that you have been driving, your driving activity is almost automatic. And at the same time, you can have a chat on the phone, you can check your email, because the driving part is...
You shouldn't, though.
You shouldn't do, but we all do. And this is because the driving activities is almost going automatic, and you have space to elaborate from a cognitive point of view different things. And this is what we think. But this is what happening right now in Formula One, for example. There are a lot of situations where the driving activity, even if going at 300 kilometers per hour, is always automatic. If you think that, I mean, can you imagine driving 300 kph and talking via radio with the race engineers? But this is something which is happening at every race. It means that the driving activity itself is automatic, and they have cognitive space to talk with the engineer. But then when something unexpected happens, for example, heavy rain or a puncture, some drivers, they shout to their race engineer, please leave me alone, don't talk with me, because this is the moment where the driving activity is not possible to go automatic, because they have to elaborate the different situation which came out, and so they lose the automatic activity and they need to elaborate. So for us, our daily life is always an alternation between automatic state and cognitive action. So the more you are able to save energy going automatic, the better it is than when a cognitive action is required.
So yeah, I think it's pretty fascinating. Obviously, it's adding a lot of value to each and one of us, what you've created. So if I want to make use of your training, mental training offering, you mentioned you have like some portable devices. What sort of possibilities do I actually have to use your facilities or your offerings? Is there even maybe some sort of virtual training that I can make use of in if I can't or can't travel to Tuscany? What is in there for people outside of your region?
Okay, so we have, as I said, the main headquarters is here in Italy, in Tuscany, but then we have another big mental gym in Milan, where we train corporate, so the C-level of important corporation in Italy. Then we have another mental gym, a small one in UK, close to the Silverstone racetrack. And then we have another small mental gym in Bordighera, close to Monte Carlo, where we train professional tennis player. And once the people are used to our training methodologies, then we give them what we call home kit. So basically is a plastic case with inside there are the EEG headband and the heart rate recorder, and then we provide them with a credential to enter into our web platform where they can download all our mental tests, and they can compete between each other in order always to improve their neural efficiency. So our goal is always to improve the brain performance, reducing the unnecessary waste of energy. This is the slogan that we have.
Yeah, it's great to make this actually measurable finally. So maybe you have some links that we can share about your research and also about those offerings you've mentioned. We're going to share those in the show notes. And that actually just leaves me with saying thank you so much for following my invite and sharing that exciting piece of work you've created. It was definitely great having you, and all the best for the remaining season.
Thank you, Fee. It's been really a pleasure, and I will wait for the Italian version.
Okay, I'll get back to you on that one. Have a great day, and bye-bye, everyone.
Und zu guter Letzt noch in eigener Sache, wenn euch unser Podcast gefällt, dann hinterlasst uns doch eine Bewertung im App Store. Wir freuen uns sehr darüber. Viele Grüße.